we're all familiar with the problem which arises as to Clyde comes. Is somebody who looks like he really wants to plead guilty. Do you say, well, look, the best way to do this is to make a full explanation now and to be seen to be remorseful from the very outset, or do you nevertheless maintain your position? They're not easy decisions to make by any means. In recent times, with the introduction of the New Evidence Act and the development of the law relating to evidence, criminal law generally, the way in which the issue of admissibility of confessions and admissions has moved on. I must say that I haven't had the need to look at this area myself for quite some time. It's just not something that's arisen in any trial that I've been in for years. Voluntariness, exclusion of a total confession on the basis of some discretionary ground. You will already have noted that Catherine Boston has put together some materials. She'll tell you about it, but I can indicate to you that having gone through those last night myself, it's going to form a very convenient touchstone to consideration of those issues as we go. I'm told that Green's List is doing something like 40 of these seminars every year. Every year at the moment. We're very grateful that the supporters of the List come along. It gives us the opportunity to give something back to the to those who support the List. And it also gives us the opportunity of giving those who come some insight into the nature of the expertise that's available on the List. Both Michael and Catherine are very well regarded young criminal lawyers, and I have no doubt that they'll be of considerable assistance in helping us come to grips with the topics which they're discussing. Now, who was it that was going to go first? Michael. Michael will be dealing with you with the general issue that I first raised. Michael Penarese. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. You can all hear me, all right? Yeah. At this ungodly hour that we're all here, it's probably a most fortunate hour for us because. Generally, it's an hour that the clients are ringing because a warrant has been executed on their property at 5 a.m, and they're calling you up to say they're now at the police station and they're about to head into a record of interview, probably a little bit earlier, maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock. And there's a reason for that, because it basically imbalances the person. That's why they do the warrant so early or at an inconvenient time of night. Because they want the person to be in a position where they're an authority and the other person's destabilised. Now, the reason I can say that is because I was 18 years in the police force, so I have some knowledge about warrants and arresting people and what police sometimes do in records of interview. But in relation to the topic I've got there, this is the starting point. All right. So, you've all got these sheets with you here today, and basically, it's a decision as to when the client calls, what do you say to them? There's the general position that you say, well, say no comment as a general fix-all position. This is just an illustration of the United Kingdom. They have a different approach to the caution. The caution itself is that at times the defence, if it is present, say if it's an obvious defence, if the client doesn't put it forward in the record of interview when they're being spoken to by police, there is the possibility that that can be used against them, that it's contrived or made up or put together at a later stage. Thankfully, and this was about, from recollection, about 10 years ago, possibly 15, Victoria was also considering a position such as this, but we didn't do it. I've added in the sheets there what would be a current document that the police use, because police are scripted. They don't like to embellish or go off the off track, in particular with things such as the caution and the rights. I won't go through them because you'll know them and you can read them in your own time. And also as some other aspects to do with children, objection to the use of the recording. You can have a look at those in your own time. I'll leave that up for the moment, because one of the reasons they have to do that is because, one, it's an obligation under law, and two, with the formation of what is now the progression in record of interviews, a long time ago, probably older than many of you first came into the law, records of interview were typed. And so it was an I said, he said, the person was sitting across there, the police officer across the table, and the police officer would type in a question and hopefully type in the actual answer that the client gave. There was no real checks and balances on that. Thankfully, we moved to another system, which was a cassette, an audio cassette, and then subsequently a CD, same thing, same approach. That had more checks and balances. You were able to check whether or not the interview had been interfered with. You could take it to a an audio expert to see if there'd been editing or stops or breaks in the record of interview, for such things as police stopping the interview to have a quiet chat to the client about the direction that they were taking in the record of interview and maybe get them back on course. Now, thankfully, we've come sort of to a full circle. We're now at what is a DVD, which is an audio and visual recording, and you've seen some of those. Now, they have the benefit of actually seeing the client and the police at that point of time on arrest and without any of the possible speculation as to whether or not there's been interference with the client. That has its own problems, and I'll address those in a moment. But significantly is you'll get the phone call from the client who says, I've been picked up for such and such a charge. I'm currently at this particular police station. I've said this already. I'm planning to say this. What do you think? Can I get bail? Is it going to be something that's going to occur? If I tell them everything, will I get bail? All of these questions are put to you as the solicitor on your first contact with the client. Another one is, can I have someone come down and be with me? There's another one. So these are all the considerations, and you don't have much time to deal with it because the police want to hurry up and get on with the record of interview, so you have to be fairly quick about this. You'll probably also like to talk to the police officer and see what their view is. Hopefully they tell you the correct view as to bail and where they're actually going with the investigation. But these are important considerations. There'll be a couple of war stories here, but a couple of things I've had happen in the past is I've had a client ring up at 3 in the morning. Yes, I do leave my mobile phone on for some reason. He was calling from the rear of a divisional van, and he'd been in the back of the van for 20 minutes. For some reason, they didn't take his mobile phone off him. And he was telling me about the locations he could see out the small window as they were driving along. The 20-minute journey, as I listened to it, seemed to take him far outside where the police station was he was going for a record of interview. But that's a nice highlight for me to know, when I received the record of interview, to know that prior to that there was this fairly lengthy journey, I imagine over a lot of speed humps and so forth. Information about the arrest and about the pre-record of interview is important. The reason being is because the time of day and place, and I'll go to that in a moment, will be important to you to assess, as are the charges. You may think you've all been had clients ring up and we all know what we're doing here, but I must say, in the last few years, there have been a small number of solicitors who, by the time I get the brief for trial or so forth, have actually never actually watched the audio of the record of interview, or the video, I should say, of the record of interview. When I come to watch it, there are significant matters in it that might be relevant. Usually we get the transcript at some point and we look at that and we say, oh, that's, look, he's made an admission, or it's just a straight no comment, don't worry about it, we'll put it to one side, I don't have time to look at it, but it's a no comment, so it's of no relevance to me. Surprisingly, I've had a no comment where I've actually listened and watched, listened in this case, there wasn't video at that time, listened to it, and in the background I can hear the co-accused in another room with very thin walls at this particular police station. I won't name the police station at Mornington, but there. And in the background I can hear the co-accused yelling out, all right, don't do it again, I'll talk, through the walls, coming up on the audio of the second room. Now, even though my fellow said no comment, it's interesting to note that might be useful later on down the track. I'll just move on. So you've got that there. That might be of some assistance to you, because I'm not going to go through the legislation, because I've had a look at what Catherine Boston's put together, and I'd say that that would be a starting point for everyone. It's very detailed and very good. So I'll just go straight to this. So the first thing the most advantageous position for a solicitor and their client is arrest by appointment. If you can manage it, I'd advise you to do that. The reason being is essentially this. usually you can suggest the time and place, location. You can prepare your client as to what they wear, so they don't turn up wearing the wife beat her singlet and unbrushed hair and so forth, especially if they're going to be facing a rape charge or something like that. So we don't have them looking like a rapist when we go into the video record of interview. So that's a benefit. If you can arrange that without too much drama, I'd advise it. It means you have more control over it. The second aspect of that is arrest by appointment might be done without you being contacted first. You might have received the client after the interview, and the arrest by appointment is that they thought they were going in there to make a statement. And next minute, funnily enough, they find out that they're really under arrest but never told they're under arrest. So there's a consequence for that, and you'll be looking into that and having a look at Catherine's material as to what you do with that type of situation where they're, well, they don't know they're under arrest and they're not told about it in the record of interview. The next part there I've got there is suspect or witness or aiding with inquiries. A number of categories that police use. You've always heard on the television, Crime Stoppers, that there's a person assisting police currently with those inquiries. Well, is that a witness or is it the suspect? I'm not sure, but you need to find out whether or not your client is the suspect or the witness, because there are ramifications involved in that. Again, that's the legal position. I'll let Catherine deal with that with you. But for instance, there has been a trend I've noticed in some of the crime squads, and that is that they will take a suspect in, but not for as a suspect. They'll obtain a statement from the individual, usually for fraud matters, I noticed, in particular. But unfortunately, the statement forms the starting or stepping stone to the record of interview. So they do the witness statement, and next minute they're taken to another room and subsequently interviewed for an offence. I think that's inappropriate, and obviously there are means that you'll have to deal with that. Again, Catherine's material and her talk will highlight that as well. But be wary of that. It's not very good conduct, but it seems to be a way to, it's almost like entrapment, though we don't have that defence here. It seems to be a backdoor mechanism to turn a witness back into a suspect through these particular means. The next point I've got there, some of the comments that are said in record of interview, if you watch them, you'll see some of these comments. I don't know why they say them. They don't need to say them, the police or the detectives, investigators. It's in your best interest to tell us everything. I suppose the key point there is the word your. Is it your client's interest to tell them everything in a particular situation? It's dependent on the charge. It's dependent on their position and what they've told you, if they've managed to contact you. But generally it's not, because that's sort of a revelation of everything that can possibly be put to the client will be put. The next one, we just want to your side of the story in fairness to you. Key words there are your and fairness. I don't know about fairness, but their side of the story may be this. They get that side of the story and they go, aha, Well, guess what? The other person said this. That's sort of a form of cross-examination, but I suppose they're putting it to the client. But was that fair? Rather than put the version that they're aware of and then ask for their side of the story. So just be wary of the sequence or chronology of the questioning. These all sound like very sort of basic things, but the ramifications can be quite dramatic. Just reading my notes here. So just move on, because we don't have a lot of time. Co-offenders, your mate has just told us everything. Best you do the same. Well, that may or may not be true, but it tends to have an influence on clients, whether or not the person that they're with has told about something or put them into the crime. You may not know about that. That's something afterwards, but be wary of that in the record of interview. I put down there coercive techniques, often speculated upon but rarely addressed. They're not going back to the myth of the telephone books and, you know, the telephone books don't leave marks and all that sort of thing. I don't know, do they still publish telephone books? Probably not. I think it's an iPad or something now. But so it's quite intimidating for the client when you've got a number of detectives who have come round to their house early in the morning in front of their parents, their wife, their children, done a major search through the property at 5 o'clock in the morning when they're probably at their least resistance. And the detectives, with some presence to them, take them away. It can be difficult for a client to have a situation where they can stand up for themselves and make a no-comment record of interview. An example of that is one time I went to a record of interview out at Heidelberg. And I don't know what the charge was, but that's not that relevant. And the client, I went there, we discussed the position of the client. It seemed that the charge probably wouldn't proceed, but he had to be interviewed as a matter of course, as a matter of procedure. Met the client at the front of the police station. I said, look, we see your position is, you're telling me, you say no comment. Yes, good, all right. Well, I'm just here, really, because obviously if I'm there at the record of interview, that might have consequences for me being able to participate any further with that client. But anyway, so his position was no comment. We went into the record of interview. The police asked a couple of questions, and then from that point on, he said no comment. And I'm thinking, well, this will be very short and sweet. We'll be out of here very soon. And then the next question was a crucial question about the identity of a vehicle. And from that point on, he crumbled and basically I think the phrase was two slaps to get them talking and three to shut them up, is the old police lingo. This fellow would not stop talking. I looked over him and said, well, what happened to the no comment? But he just kept talking. But in any event, it was had a reasonable result for him. And I must say, it might not be funny at the time, but it seems funny now. He didn't tell me that prior to going into the small interview room, which they're usually small and dingy because, you know, puts more pressure on the client, is that he'd stood in some dog excrement outside. He didn't tell anybody. And as we walked in, we sat in the interview room, that confined space. After about 10 minutes, I thought, there's something not right here. There's a very overwhelming odour coming from. He said, oh, Michael, I have to apologise. I stood in dog poo out the front. Great. So probably that's why he confessed, I'm not sure. But anyway. So inducement of bail, inducements by police, inducement not to look at other things, inducement not to charge the wife, all of these things play a major factor. You need to know about them. You may not get a lot of time pre-record of interview, but if you can find out these things, it might be pertinent to have, and many of you might have in the firms you work for, a checklist. Clients ring up and you'll tick a box saying, did I ask that quickly, because when they ring you up, you're usually in the middle of a number of things, or you've just woken up in the morning, or you're about ready to go home, or you're at home cooking spaghetti for dinner or something, and you just don't have the facility to think clearly, and a checklist might be a handy thing to have at the office, just to tick the boxes, get the, you know, usually have them as a telephone contact thing, I'm sure. All right, so the next part, the state of the client, affected by drugs or alcohol, mental issues. All of those are listed on there, and the reason being is they're fairly obvious. You'll get a video interview, and you'll see the person sitting there looking a bit like a stunned mullet, eyes are the size of pinheads. They're obviously affected by drugs. They're very compliant, and they're basically saying whatever the police want to say or answer as the police want them to do. Now, that's a difficulty. Probably shouldn't have occurred. And then you'll be later on going back to Catherine's material about, now, how do I get rid of this? Because that's not right. So those types of things. I've had clients sitting in, currently in the video interviews, clients sitting there who'd been attended by the police in some one of these run-through Agberg things that are quite common these days. And he was sitting there. I thought he was wearing a turban. He's a dark-skinned fellow in the record of India. And then I found out he had a head injury, and they'd bandaged him up with this big bandage around his head. Obviously, he was concussed. I didn't really realise it until he told me that wasn't a turban. But they did the record of interview anyway with him suffering from concussion and having a significant bandage around his head. So obviously there's a consequence there. You look at that. You can't... That's one of the things you... Have you been assaulted? Are you injured? Yes, I have. I received a head injury. I've had a machete to my head. Well, you better put me under the police officer. Thanks. Go and speak to the police officer. I don't think it's convenient that he gets interviewed this time. Well, he doesn't want to have medical treatment because they always say I don't want to have the medical treatment. But maybe in this case you should probably get the FMO, the forensic medical officer, in for the police and maybe just check that, possibly. Or you may not, depending if you want the record of interview out later. But, you know, you've got to look at your client's interests, don't you? So they might need medical attention, whether or not they know it or not. So what you're looking at there is also their manner of dress. I told you about that because if you want to do arrest by appointment, that's the most convenient. You'll notice that a lot of people come in, they've got them at work, for instance, and say they're a mechanic, they've got grease all over them, they're wearing their overalls, they look shocking, in particular for a sex matter, and they come in. Just a quick reference, I've had a client interviewed on the video, charged with rape, a number of rapes, and they picked him up early in the morning. He quickly put some clothes on because they didn't have a lot of time to muck around, I suppose. Took him back to the police station, and he is sitting there with the blue wife beater T-shirt on, the tattoos, hadn't washed his hair, looked pretty greasy hair, hadn't washed, really. And he definitely looked like a rapist. But what do you do? I mean, it's very difficult. Or they've been, as I said, they've been injured. The black eye, those types of impressions. Because the video now, as much as we use it to counteract the speculation or the possibility there's been interference with a client, can work against us in their presentation. So it has that other side, other dimension to it. All right. The location, as I said, that one that they drove around for 20 minutes. But, you know, sometimes they'll drive to a police station and then they go right, for some reason, the mechanism's not working, the recording, or they don't have the facilities. Then they'll take them into town to one of the squads, and that can be quite intimidating for the client. Religion and culture. I've mentioned about Indigenous people. They don't like to have eye contact. It's not disrespectful. It's just their cultural position. Some religions, I'm not going to identify any in particular, but be wary of those things when it comes to such matters as sex offences and so forth. I won't go any further with that. We're going to move on. When to speak. Sex offences, generally it's convenient if you have a client who's being charged with a sex offence, their position, so what happened? Yes, this happened. Consensual. I wasn't there. It's not me. Whatever it might be. I didn't do that, or whatever it might be. Probably, depending on you, it'll be a judgment for you, and it'll be come down to case-by-case assessment. You'll need to assess whether or not it is important for them to place that on the record, of interview. The reason being is when you go into a sex trial, you don't particularly want to be calling your client in a sex trial if you can avoid it, if they've already made the particular admissions or the particular position as to the defence. It makes it a lot easier. I find it works better than calling the client, unless it is that the client is in such a position that you could call them. Homicides, murders, and those types of serious offending, well, it's a case-by-case basis. Generally, you wouldn't, but sometimes if there's a clear self-defence, it might be important. They're on record of interview. They're obviously under a lot of pressure, and we've seen all the videos of all the media interest cases. They always play the record of interview on the television for such cases. They're interesting to look at because you can see the manner in which the people usually make some form of admission. Next page, firearms and drugs possession. I know Catherine was involved in the Momcilovich thing. I think I represented the partner, Nikovsky, at some point in time when I was working at a firm. But those types of deeming provisions, maybe there is a position where they can say, well, the firearms weren't mine. I didn't have access to the house. It was multiple access. This wasn't my place. I was only staying there. I never visited that room. That might be important at that point in time, if there's a reverse onus or a position of a deeming position that might be present. All right, nearly finished. There we are. Okay, so, and just remember this, that if they say no comment on the record of interview, there is a differing of opinion in relation to, as a party, as to whether or not the direction should be made. If there is a no comment record of interview, jury won't find out about it. But, I mean, the words are fairly clear. They're written there, I won't repeat them. And it's a powerful phrase that's provided to the jury in a trial, that it's the prosecution that brings the charges. They have to prove them. The fact that there is no actual record of interview or your client giving evidence is irrelevant in that situation. So the fallback position, as far as I can see, would be a no comment, but assess all of these factors, assess whether or not it is in your client's interest too, assess what they want to do, and maybe that checklist might be something you might consider, just having a notebook or something like that. So I think that, am I in time?
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Michael. It's impossible even to brush the surface of the area of when to answer, how to answer, how to prepare in the time we have available this morning. It's something that would usefully be done in a seminar to which we're all contributing over a period of probably half a day. Could I just add to this something in my own observations? Clearly, one cannot have a blanket policy, do not answer questions. There are some types of offences where normally you would expect that your client would be making full denials. Old sex offences clearly fall into that category. The reason that's the case is because in old sex offences there's likely to be any direct evidence other than that of the victim available. So your judgment in advising your client will always be informed by the possibility of there being out there independent evidence which is going to blow him out of the water. If you are looking at sex cases and you are assisting a client in making that decision, always remember that if it is a sex case where the client knows the person, you'll have to ask the client about whether or not he's had any phone conversations or other conversations with that person since the event, because in many, many cases there will be attempt at a pretext conversation or an attempt to record a subsequent meeting between them. On the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum in fraud cases, normally you find in fraud cases that there is any amount of standalone documentary evidence which on its face is damning. You have to expect that, and it's only in the cases where you are absolutely certain that your client knows what's out there and is able to explain it that you'd put him in the position where he's going to be sitting there looking at boxes of documents, having documents put to him which he hasn't had a chance to consider. I can say no more than that at this stage. We need to get on to Catherine and her presentation. We're already running behind time. We'll have a short break just for a couple of minutes. If people want a cup of coffee, could you just please just grab one and resume your seat? As soon as you do, we'll get back to it. Thanks very much.